You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
My name is Liv Moore, and I died, sort of. I had a promising career and a great fiancé. Then I went to the world's worst boat party and got turned into a zombie. Now I work at the morgue for access to brains, but brain eating has side effects. I take on the victim's personality traits and have visions which I use to help solve their murders. I work with a detective who thinks I'm a psychic, and my boss, the medical examiner, the only person who knows my secret. I'm a crime-fighting zombie.
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks as we talk iZombie Season 1, Episode 13, Blaine's World, party time. Excellent. Actually, this was not a party at all. Hi, my name is Heather, and I am joined by my podcasting partner in crime, Alex. Hey, Alex.
Hello, everybody.
Alex is actually talking to us from her new laptop.
Ooh. Yes, I am. And it's shiny and pretty. And it's Windows 8.1, so it's going to freeze any moment now.
Yeah, mine does that occasionally as well. So just in time for our final episode, hopefully it won't freeze and hopefully we won't have any problems. This is our final episode of iZombie for this season. We'll talk more at the end, but we have learned that it has been not only renewed, but we'll be back in the fall. So we don't have to wait too long.
Yes!
Which is, yes, very much a yes kind of a thing, because this has left us with, I think, some very intriguing questions. I'm really looking forward to talking about some of the stuff that we have coming up here. We start, of course, always with our panel titles, which some of them were really good and some of them were, there was one, that's okay. Meet the New Boss, okay. I liked Getting a Bum Rap, that was okay. I mean, that was a bum sequence, so that worked. And I'm sorry for the bums out there. That it's just because that was the title. I'm not saying anything untoward about bums. Okay. Moving on, there was Great Balls of Fire, which again fit that whole sequence, so they're getting really good about that. We had the first one, Major Cold Spell. Oh, poor Major. I just wanted to hug him and warm him up and hug him. You know,
I have some ideas of how he could warm up.
You know, if you take your clothes off and it's skin to skin, you can actually warm up much faster. I think that's what you
need to do with Major. Yeah, that's exactly what he should do, definitely.
Maybe. My favorite was Don't Turn Around, Uh-Oh. Oh, yeah, Alex has no idea about this whole song. She didn't even realize it. The whole sequence when they turn up the music and that's playing, and Major's doing all of his stuff with the whole dun 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 dun. I'm like, yes! I'm just in 80s retro music heaven. Alex is like, what? I don't get it.
Yeah, it went over my head, unfortunately. So at least one of us had fun.
I did. I'm still having fun with that. I'm doing a little dance, especially since that was the soundtrack to that whole sequence that we're going to be talking about. I loved that whole sequence. That was great. Her favorite was the punny one, Bloodbath and Beyond.
That was delicious and amazing. And that was the title card that I loved. I always say how much I love the puns. So it's not a surprise that the most punny one was my favorite. Because Bloodbath and Beyond, we don't even have it in Poland. There is no chain like that. We have similar ones, but they're not called Bloodbath and Beyond. But I'm aware of the company because I watch American TV, so clearly, obviously. So when I saw the title card, I was like, this is brilliant.
See, and I'm here where there are Bed Bath & Beyonds everywhere, and I saw, and I'm writing it down, I go, Bloodbath & Beyond. That's kind of boring. It wasn't until you said that was your favorite, I went, oh, Bloodbath. And because I think they did it as one word.
Yeah, they
if
did.
If it was Bloodbath & Beyond, I would have gotten it, but it was Bloodbath.
But if they did it as two words, it would be too obvious, and I would probably enjoy it less.
Okay, well, maybe I was just still on, don't turn around, uh-oh.
Yeah.
I love how even the title card had, uh-oh. I will expose her to this song, this wonderful song, Der Kommissar. Okay, I've had my little moment there, which I'm sure I will have again when we get to that section, but we need to talk about this. Final episode.
Yes.
I'm very sad to say it is the final episode. I really am.
But you gotta say, you have to admit, they know how to end with style.
For not knowing originally if this was going to get picked up or not, I was kind of hesitant about the finale, which I think is why I don't think I rated it low, but why I rated last week's episode lower, down to a peri peri, was because that is a setup for the finale. It was definitely a setup. It was a solid episode, but what is the finale going to be? Did it set it up properly for it to continue? Or was this supposed to be self-contained? Or does it look like they quickly went back in and, okay, we've got to re-edit some stuff to make it seem it this episode actually seemed pretty seamless that it was part of the story that they were going for as a whole, that it wasn't just a sudden, crikey, we have a season two, so we need to take this out and put this in. Or if they did it, I didn't sense it.
Me neither. It was very well done, and it was so consistently good, and the story just had this flow that I'm, as a writer, I'm really envious of how they did it. Because before we started recording, we spent ages trying to come up with a way to make this podcast work, because we couldn't exactly chop them up into pieces to, so
Here's the
we,
crime. Here's Liv's emotions. Here's Liv and her
different
friends. Here's
sections.
Lane. Didn't work. Yeah.
And that just shows you how well executed the plot was. So, wow. If, on one hand, if they did any editing to accommodate season two, I'm impressed. But if they didn't, can you imagine this episode being the end of the show itself? I would go postal after the series finale like this one. I would not be happy with them. But as a season one ending, it's absolutely brilliant.
I can actually even see where if this had been the season, I mean the series finale, where it would have left you with enough of those questions where fanfic, your mind can just go off and do all sorts of different directions. It left enough on the table to mean that there is more story to be told, whether or not the story is something that they're professionally telling or does go into fanfic. Unlike another show that I really loved and unfortunately did get canceled after season one, but they had already gone through the whole season and filmed it, Alcatraz, that starred Jorge Garcia, and that one ended with a super duper cliffhanger that is never getting resolved and has made a lot of Alcatraz fans really upset because not only do we not know the mystery, but you left with one of your characters being mortally shot. You know, the main characters. It's like, and you're leaving us here? This one, it tied up certain things, but left enough things open and this moral ambiguity. I could see where it would be an unsatisfying but still satisfying series finale if it hadn't. I'm glad it is going to a season two, because I think they've also set it up really well for what could come next.
Yeah, definitely.
Really wonderful. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. We're gonna go fairly chronologically. I mean, we'll kind of move through some stuff and bunch some things together a little bit, but fairly chronologically. I like that our villains aren't stupid, other than Doofus Zombie, Neck Stabs Doofus Zombie. But the fact that Julian and Blaine make this connection to the shelter and the shoes, there's those little things that throughout this season I've seen where it's a little itty bitty thing that just keeps tying and keeps meaning something. Jerome's shoes have meant something this entire season. You know, it was something that wasn't just a one-off. And I love that because in life, I think in general, you have these things that are these little teeny tiny things that you always remember and that always stick there and run through. So I thought that was a really great connection and it'll tie to something later on too. It also gives Blaine this cockiness that even more so than he already has, that really does make this Blaine's world. His line there with, I love the moxie, but I'm like the Mick Jagger here. Time is on my side. Makes it so much more ominous for Major. You can stay in, I don't know how long you have that you can stay in here, but time's on my side. So, nana nana boo boo kind of thing. It gave Blaine this confidence that had me scared throughout the entire episode of what he really can do
Yeah.
and where Major really is.
We loved Blaine since the beginning. And now that we're actually used to his awful, terrible, no good, very bad name, we can embrace the complexity. He is a truly complex villain in the way that he's not a villain at all. I'm pretty sure that even though we wanted to see him as a villain, all the way through season one, he was the anti-hero. Like, I am here with my own agenda, and my agenda might not be as squeaky clean as you would like it to be, but it's mine and it's awesome because I'm awesome. I'm pretty sure that we will meet an actual evil villain in season two. Blaine is just a warm-up for what's coming.
I don't know, but he's just still so delicious, which that's one way in this interview that somebody had with Rob Thomas. He was talking about how all the writers on the show want to write for Blaine because he is just so delicious. He just they said that they've given him the green light to go for it on the material, chew up the scenery as much as he wants. And he has, but it's over the top, but in a good way, not in a bad way. I mean, I was ready for him to do a little, Maroon 5 there and have the moves like Jagger, when he did that.
I
He's
know, that's what
just,
I thought when I had it.
so rightfully cocky, but doesn't quite know, doesn't get everything. He really thinks he's just the top kingpin. And it really is Blaine's world at the start of this episode. That, I mean, there's, how could anybody take him down? let's move over back to our actual crime there with Teresa, who's been bludgeoned to death. Clive is kind of guessing that maybe Sebastian didn't do it. So we still have Clive in the mix here. We still have to have a little bit of that grounded in reality. So funny to say in the joke. And Liv eating the brains of the snarky bitch of Ravi going, what's the difference? So we still have them focusing on the crime because this crime is going to help move them into these bigger pictures. Even though obviously it's not part of our zombie hotness scale because Indian mustard just does not cut the mustard in this. We move into our Hope 2. Little Hope 2 is cured, even though did you notice she has a white belly? I wonder if that's like a leftover from her zombiness. I noticed she had a white belly.
I don't care. Hope
She's
2.0 is cured and brown,
She's
and
cured.
then her little hamster ball
That's
being smug at Liv.
Oh, that just reminded me, it was a little Disney thing. That was so cute. I love Ravi holding her there. That moves us into probably one of our big moments. And it's really Ravi's only big moment in this. I mean, later on, all he is, have you seen Major? I don't know where Major is. No, I haven't heard from Peyton. I mean, this is probably one of the most unfortunate things about this episode is Ravi is incidental almost to the entire episode. And we love Ravi so much. It did a great job with what he had, but it's one of those I almost wish the episode was longer so that we could have more Ravi, but the episode was so perfectly
I
done, I
know.
think,
And
that I don't want Ravi in it, and I hate saying that because I love you.
this is the problem with the episode in a way that's not a problem at all, because I didn't even notice how little Ravi had to do in the episode itself until we started talking about how little he had to do before we started to record. And that just shows you how well done the entire thing was. He was there, but he wasn't crucial to the plot outside of this one little, so here's a cure.
Yes, Alex actually asked me, so what can we drop out of this whole thing? And I was like, well, except for this one moment, Ravi. We love you, Ravi. Ravi does rock. Hashtag Ravi rocks. His moment, though, was very important. Very, very important, I think, in this. He's showing she wants the cure now. She doesn't care about anything else. She's just totally thinking, Major thinks he's going to kill all zombies and I'm a zombie. He hates everything about that. I want to be human again. And Ravi shows her, I have enough for one, maybe two doses. This isn't just about you. It's got to be about all zombies. And that's, I think, one of the first times that she remembers it's not just her and Blaine out there.
Yeah.
There are other people that have been turned into a zombie for however they have been. Max Rager or Blaine or whatever. But he's the one that brings her back to this whole big picture thing, which I think is nagging her throughout the rest of the episode, that she's going back and forth between big picture and her reality.
Yeah. But the one thing I really and not even loved, but respected about Ravi in that moment was that he told her outright, listen, curing you is our biggest priority right now, but that cannot be the end of it, because basically we have a plague on our hands and you're not the only one suffering from it. And I really respect him for keeping that big picture, because I'm pretty sure that even if he wasn't friends with Liv, but knew that zombies are, a thing that can be, out there and it's an option on the multiple choices question, I think he would still try to develop the cure. 'Cause this moment showed us even more what kind of a person he is, what kind of a scientist he is. And I'm pretty sure if zombie was a recognized disease, he would be heading his own department in the CDC. 'Cause that's work ethics. You're my friend and we want to cure you, but it can't end there. We have to think about other people.
Well, and this is something that really has been his character throughout the whole season, is he and Liv weren't friends originally. They were co-workers. He already knew. She didn't tell him, hey, by the way, I'm a zombie. He already figured it out. He already knew and was, starting, trying to figure out things. When her former co-worker, was it Marcy, that was down in the well, his first thing is, we need to see if we can cure her, even when it almost meant his demise. He's on that whole track. So this, he's a very caring person. He cares for Liv deeply. They are, best buds, but he has always been, had that scientist part of him. And I like that he brings that rational voice into it, because it would be so easy to just fall into the emotion, Liv's emotion. Just cure me. You've got a cure. Great. Cure me. And I don't care about the consequences. But Major is seeing that big picture. And I mean, not Major. Ravi is seeing that big picture. And that's really important to have that rational look and overview. And it's one small scene, but like I said, it really carries that ramifications throughout the rest of the episode.
Yeah, it does, which is why it's kind of fitting that we start with it. I mean, not start, but that we start talking about the details of the episode. Because even though he doesn't make an impact physically, so to speak, during the rest of the episode, the ramification of this one scene carry over through the entire thing. So yeah, hashtag Ravi rocks. He's that impactful.
I will say, at Robert Buckley, I'm disappointed. You said in one of the tweets that you did back to Sci-Fi for Chicks that Ravi's shirtless scene was coming up and was going to be epic. So now you've made it even more epic for season two, because it hasn't happened. I'm a little upset and a little disappointed. No shirtlessness in this episode. Kind of, which is how upset Liv was when she realized Ravi was right and she cursed it, poor little Hope 2.0,
Yeah,
and gets her
don't be
vision. She,
smug.
don't be smug. She gets this vision, which I like the fact that our crime really is a holdover from last week's episode. It's not really anything new. It's really the same criminal, quote unquote, that we had last week. But it links her not to thinking that it was Sebastian, our psycho zombie who she killed, but she sees the thumb drive, and that we know that this has something to do with the whole Max Rager.
Yeah.
Something that we've had for episodes, ever since we first met Lowell, R.I.P. And you saw when they got the thumb drive, when they confronted Vaughn, was it Vaughn Duclark?
I call him Steven Weber.
Steven Weber. I'm okay with just Vaughn. Vaughn, okay.
Yeah, okay. Let's call him.
It's a little wimpy, but yeah, Steven Weber.
To blame.
But she gets that link and she realizes that this is something more. Mm-hmm. This is something beyond. And it really gets us into that Max Rager storyline, which I think is where we're going to start really seeing Steven Weber. This is not the end of Steven Weber. We saw we saw him a few episodes ago. It's like, okay, that was not enough for a Steven Weber character to be. It wasn't, you know, like this one great big scene sequence type thing. It was obviously setting it for more. And this episode, with how Steven Weber also chewed the scenery, I would love to see, can I just say, I would love to see Steven Weber and David Anders together.
Yeah.
There would be no scenery left standing. It would be so beautifully chewed into little itty bitty bits. It would be beautiful.
Mm.
What Steven Weber brings, and this is what I think is hilarious, is that the first thing I remember seeing him in was a show called Wings.
Yes.
And he was kind of like the goofy, funny brother. And that's what I kind of got him thinking was goofy, funny. And then you start seeing him in some of these really dark, more dramatic roles. And he has found a really great way of combining this goofiness and drama together. He is so menacing. Those scenes when he is talking with the new scientist and showing what happened to Sebastian on the video and Max Rager and how they want to move it up to Supermax, and when Sebastian, you know, goes, I don't know if it was really full on zombie mode, but at least rage mode on the other guy.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, still working out a few bugs. He is playing this so deliciously deadpan, serious, but funny. You know, well, I guess if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, yeah, I guess he's a zombie. Sure. No big deal.
Yeah.
No big deal. And the guy, did you notice how the other scientist guy that he wants to pick up the research? Yeah, just take out the zombie part and keep all the other stuff. That's what we want.
Yeah.
The guy at first is like, it's a zombie? What? A zombie? And then it's like, okay, sure. Let's just take out the zombie part and do all this other stuff. No big deal that there's all these other people out there.
A side effect.
It's a side effect. Whatever. Whatever.
I know.
It's Max Rager is a company I don't want to work for.
Mm. But at the same time, you know, it fits into this, not stereotype, because it hasn't been played over and over and over again, but it fits this, idea of a company that does terrible things and is the source of all evil for purely commercial, reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And, Vaughn, Steven Weber, he's just this profits-oriented guy, CEO, who, yeah, I totally buy the fact that he treats zombies as a side effect. Minor headache, that's a side effect. Nausea, that's a side effect.
It's like all those drug commercials where they list all the side effects.
Yeah.
And if you or a loved one has experienced death or a serious injury. Okay, if I've experienced death, yes, I will consult with my doctor.
I know.
Or when you have a drug that has the list of side effects that basically takes over the entire commercial.
Mm. I'm
like, I think I'll just stick with my original ailment. It's fine. No. But yeah, nobody, they don't really care. We've put the declaration up there, you know, the disclaimer. You know, after that.
Can you imagine? Some side effects may include uncontrollable need for brains. If you experience it, consult your doctor.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But how quickly he just falls into that when, hey, you know, doctor, you want to see a zombie? Guess what? There's one right
Outside.
outside. And Liv and Clive come in. I love the creepy stares a lot. Hey, creepy stares a lot.
I know
As he's looking at her.
you know what it
And
reminded me of?
Grey's Anatomy?
No, years and years back when MTV Movie Awards was hosted by Jack Black, and Lord of the Ring was one of the nominees, and he did the entire sequence from Elrond's castle, where he pierced his nether part with the One Ring, and Frodo had this moment of staring at it, and Jack Black goes, "Hey, Frodo, eyes up here." When Liv went, "Hey, creepy stares a lot," I immediately flashed back to that entire sequence from MTV Movie Awards, which is probably their best sequence ever.
See, I automatically thought of like a zombie version of Grey's Anatomy that I might actually watch, but
Huh. Okay, yeah.
well, because it
Grey's
was,
Anatomy, Zombie Land. I would watch it.
yeah, I would. It's interesting watching them though with Liv and Clive there with three of the four people that are in that room. I can't
Knowing.
remember if there was like a henchman or whatever, but yeah, knowing Liv's a zombie, but her like just kind of getting these inklings of how they're treating her a little different or looking at her different or something. It's expanding the world so much. And the look that he gives when they're going through what happened and that Sebastian is the one that killed, he was hit by a car and walked away. This happened to him and he walked away. Oh, well, where is he now? Well, he's dead. Are you sure? Yeah, how? Stabbed in the head. He's like, really? Sebastian's dead. He looks over at her with this inkling of, really? How did you kill the zombie? Because he doesn't know. Has he never watched a zombie movie? The brains. It's a headshot. It's totally the headshot. But that interest that he has is, he's actually creepy. He's creepy. And the other one scares a lot.
And you have Clive in the middle of it. Just thinking
Not knowing what's
everybody's
going on.
around me is crazy and totally not normal.
Clive was very happy to get that phone call that got them out there
Oh yeah. Oh
to
yeah.
go see the 911 call kind of thing. That was really pretty funny. That creepiness though that Vaughn has really plays into Blaine's creepiness too. We have him keeping Major in the freezer. I love how Blaine keeps coming in with like the parka and all this kind of fun stuff. How he brings up this info that he gets about the freezing from all the stuff that the Nazis did during World War II. That made me hearken back to Vaughn and that scientist of how cold and calculating they were and how they just have this end game and they don't care about this. And it made that reference that Blaine did actually made Vaughn and the scientist even more menacing to me because of where they might now take this. Because like you were saying, here's Blaine. He's not a henchman, but he's still lower down on the corporate food chain. He can still be bought. He still has mountains to climb if he wants to be the top dog. He says he wants to be a megalomaniac. He's still not there yet. He's still not the top. Steven Weber
Is the top, yeah.
is the top. And so I could see that got very scary for me.
See, this is why I think that Steven Weber is going to make for an exceptional villain in season two. Because he is going to be very hard to take down. And I cannot wait for what they come up with him. Because watching that office scene, I was captivated. I couldn't
It was a
look
chess
away.
match.
Where none of them, nobody in that room knew all the rules to the chess match. Not Clive, not Liv, because even though they were, Vaughn and the scientist were suspicious, but I don't think she had an inkling of them knowing that she's a zombie, but that I think she suspects that they know zombies exist.
Yeah,
And
I think
then,
she knows they know something, she just doesn't know what
yeah.
they know.
And for Vaughn and the scientist, Liv is still a wild card. So basically, in that room, nobody knew the rules by which they were playing, and still they played a magnificent mind game.
Well, and that was the difference, because I think that they are playing chess there, and they don't know how it's going to come out. I think Vaughn believes he will come out on top because he thinks he knows more than they do, which they might. I think, like we said, I think she knows they know something. They don't necessarily know that she's a zombie. Once they get into the whole zombiness, Liv, maybe you should do something with your hair and your skin. Although she's
Yeah.
using a bit more makeup, but she does kind of stand out compared to other zombies. Blaine, on the other hand, I think he's playing checkers. A very good game of checkers. You know, he's doing the whole king me kind of thing, but he's still playing, I think, a lower level game because he thinks he has the upper on everybody. I mean, even the way he treats Major, and he's having fun. He's toying with this human, this measly human. I mean, that's how, you know, that's how he's looking at him. These are humans. These are just, he thinks the humans are my pawn, whereas Vaughn thinks everybody is his pawn.
I think the best way to think about it is just think about Blaine as a big fish in a small pond, while Vaughn is the big fish in a big pond, and he's the, you know.
Well, he's the one that there's a book in the Dr. Seuss library. It's actually by P.D. Eastman called Fish Out of Water. You know, feed him a pinch, no more than a spot, or something may happen. You never know what. I think they keep feeding Vaughn, and he's just going to keep growing bigger, bigger, and bigger. Blaine, on the other hand, is having fun toying with his supper because there's always room for soup. Now, Major, this is one where I'm going to be a little upset with you. Really? You know you're talking to a zombie meister and he's keeping you in the deep freeze and he brings you soup and you don't think anything of it. You just start eating it until a piece of, oh, yuck is in there. It gave us an insight though, again, still to Major. Not that he wouldn't spit this out, but did you see how vehemently he was like not only throwing the soup away, he was trying to get out. He is really disgusted by this whole concept. Truly and utterly disgusted. I have a feeling when he read stories about the Donner Party, he didn't read stories about the Donner Party because he just couldn't handle it, or Alive or any of this. I think that's just so far beyond Major's comprehension of what he would be able to do. And we have it though showing exactly the kind of being that Blaine is. One of my favorite lines is, eating brains doesn't make you a monster. It takes a little more effort. And that's what Blaine actually sees. It takes more effort to be a monster. Guess what? I'm putting in the effort. I am a monster, you know. But just eating the brains, that's not anything like a big deal.
You know what was the
No big
best
deal.
part about that scene that actually hit me long after the scene itself ended? What an amazing piece of foreshadowing it was. Because I didn't think Major spitting the soup and, you know, behaving the way he behaved was a big deal. Well, it was, but not in the way it turned out to be. If Liv saw Major in that moment, I don't think she would do what she's done. And just, you know, this is the way I like my foreshadowing. For me not to realize it's foreshadowing until it's too late. And I go, oh my God, that's what it was. And it wasn't even some mystery that we had to wonder. They provided us this foreshadowing on a silver platter or in a ceramic bowl, if you will. And we didn't know what we were seeing until it was too late. So kudos to the writers because that was perfection.
Well, I like my foreshadowing to be in your face, but you don't know what's in your face, or you know what's in your
Exactly.
face, but you don't, but you think it's for something else, and then at the end you're like, oh, my, like the whole thing a few weeks ago with when she realized that it was the brain that she was on that made her think that Major accepted everything
I
and was all honky
know.
dory and wonderful. Which that was, part of this whole thing is she's thinking that's what she really wants is for Major to accept everything and be honky dory. And he physically cannot, it's not even just spitting it out. He threw it back up. He didn't just go, phew. Yeah, I'll say he's, it is a guttural reaction for him, how disgusting, disgusted he is by this. Which, of course, that scene ends with something that I think also rocks him to the core. When Blaine rolls in, whatever, on the meat hook there, Tommy, a kid who was part of the shelter that Major was a part of. This is a kid that he knew that is dead. Not a zombie, but is dead. And it just, everything in this season has been hitting home that Major is utterly repulsed by this whole idea and is, Mr. Vigilante Man. And that I think is going to be very important in season two. Whereas this whole time we have Clive becoming more and more of a confident cop. Because we go from this really quick into the whole Cam stuff with him driving, him, the 911 call, all these kind of things there. Him meeting the redhead who is doing the same thing the other assistant did. I love it when the assistant is just so busy on the phone, texting on the phone. Whatever, whatever. And they try to kill him with the car blowing up. Poor cops. The two police officers that got caught in the blast of Cameron's car. I hope they get okay, that they survive. But it leaves Clive, he's been on this whole chase this whole time to catch up with Cameron, and they actually catch up with Cameron. I mean, stupid Cameron not checking to see that there's a tracker in the bag, trying to cross the border, and Clive actually getting the APB out so that they can't arrest him. I really did like that scene with Clive and Liv and Cameron in the interrogation room because I saw a transformation in Clive. Because here's Liv. The brain did affect her this episode, but not a lot. Here's Liv trying to be this snarky bitch, as she said in the beginning, because she's on Teresa's brain. But that's not what really breaks him. It's Clive being a smart and confident cop. Here's Cameron saying, hey, here's the deal. Try me as a minor, and I'll tell you everything, or I'm going to totally lawyer up, and you've got nothing. And then Clive just comes back out. Well, sure, never mind. We'll just let you go. And I'll tell the press that you cooperated. And then we'll see what the people who are after you think. And I love that moment because it was this confident Clive cop. He's not cowering like he was in the beginning when he had transferred from Vice and people didn't like him. I don't think he cares anymore. He wants to be a good cop again.
And he is awesome. He is awesome because even when Liv didn't make the connection, and not even as a fake psychic, but as Liv, she didn't make half of the connections that Clive did, and she was the one playing catch up because she only had what, one vision the entire episode?
Yeah, I think just one vision and then a few attitudes, but that was it. Like, this was not a big brain for her.
But this was Clive being competent and being a detective with the solve rate that's impressive and hell yeah.
And we have some more of him at the end, but I think it definitely shows this wonderful bookending from you talking about in that first episode where she says, "How did you ever solve crimes without me?" So
That's
this
how.
time, yeah, he really didn't need her. That's how you solve. That's how you break someone. That's what you do. And I like seeing this more confident cop, Clive. I really do. So Liv is just about had it with everything. And she's about to leave a dose for Ravi to still work on, but she says, "I'm going to take half of this and I'm going to cure myself. Damn the consequences. I don't care if I only have 48 hours to live, like Hope 1.0 did. I'm going to do it." And of course we have the phone call right before with the bring me the monkey brains kind of thing with her and Blaine talking. that changes everything. This gets us to where we're basically constantly interrupting any chance Liv has of becoming normal in this episode. And she thinks that she's doing all this to save Major. But we have Major being more like Major Rambo now. Because even while Liv is thinking about meeting with Blaine, we had another throwaway line where earlier Major said that he really had to pee. Yeah, whatever, nobody's stopping you. And that actually plays into Major figuring out a way to break out. He goes through the pockets of Tommy, he gets the lighter, he starts the fire. He's taking things into his own hands and takes down, I think my count is
One,
five zombies
two, three, four. Yeah, four or five.
total. Well, with Julian, when Julian eventually comes back,
Yeah.
he is Major Rambo. I don't know what rank Rambo was, but he's Major Rambo in this. The way he gets out, starts the fire, kills Doofus One, comes around him with the music. When she turns up the music and he's walking from the car with all these guns and things to the music, and right through the window is shooting them. And he goes for the headshots. And he does that moment, which I love, when he's like, okay, yeah, you're just the chef. You're just the butcher. Go ahead. And then just sees that glint of the knife and throws her right into that saw. Oh. He is take no prisoners. He is had it with zombies. This was just incredible.
Let me tell you, Rambo wished he was as badass as Major. Seriously, I was watching it and thinking, oh yeah, you are not just a pretty boy love interest.
No.
Welcome to the Wrath of Major, and this is what
What?
happens when you make Major crazy.
I will say that I wish he did one thing that Rambo did, which, was kind of do the whole thing shirtless. That would have been a nice little extra there. But, wow.
No, come on. I was watching it and I was like, oh yeah, this is iZombie that, wait, did I switch to Walking Dead? No, this is still Major.
If there was a crossbow, then it would have been
The Walking Dead,
The
yeah.
Walking Dead.
Here's a plan for season two, writers. Teach Robert Buckley how to shoot crossbow.
There
I guarantee you an uptick in viewership immediately. Also, cut off his sleeves. That they are only getting in a way.
Well, we have The Walking Dead that's, in the South. They've moved up to Alexandria there. We have starting this summer Fear the Walking Dead, which is LA. Seattle makes sense.
Yeah.
We could have a zombie apocalypse up there with Major
Totally.
leading the way. I mean, he's gone off the edge. Rick's gone off the edge. It's part and parcel for everything that happens.
Everybody's going crazy.
And I mean, the whole time he's doing this, like I said, Liv thinks she's saving him. Come on, Liv, really? Just because it's the right shirt, it says health and shelter. You take the hood down. Come on, it's silly. Well, Major is off doing all of his Rambo stuff. That moment when Julian and Blaine come back, well, we just see Julian at first, and Julian is looking around and sees everything and goes into the meat locker. I thought maybe he had gone. I thought Major had gone and was like on the hunt, but he
Nope.
waited. He waited and was luring them back into his trap. And
Dodge
I
this.
love that. I love him closing the door. The window's already blown out and throws the grenade in. And did you notice how he just crouched down as the explosion comes out the window above him? Total vigilante. He's a zombie vigilante. And it was
Look
a
at me,
beautiful
I'm
moment.
Batman.
Exactly. Until, of course, he forgets that where Julian goes.
Blaine
So does
goes.
Blaine goes.
Yeah. That was painful.
It was very painful, both for him and for us.
Yeah.
I will say that that was the one bit of telegraphing that I went, okay, that's a bad wound. That one is fatal. You get the slow and agonizing death. Blaine says, I was like, okay, telegraph, So Liv's gonna turn him into a zombie. That was the one telegraph moment, but.
Yeah, but at the same time, we saw it coming from 3 episodes ago.
Yeah.
So you can't really blame them.
Well, and it did take off the table because I did think that he was gonna find, well, he did. I mean, actually, he did find out, not because they told him. He found out when Liv comes back and sees all of this. As she's sitting there with him and he's realizing and asking these questions, like the look on his face, that was actually more painful. That look that he had looking at her and realizing what she is and how long this has been happening. And Blaine loving it. He doesn't know. Oh, die with one great big dose of irony. It was a really painful moment because here's Blaine getting the upper hand again, even though Liv shot him and he's in pain. It's not the same kind of pain. I mean, Major is dying. And so he's relishing over the fact that he's now ruined Major's life and Liv's life and ha ha ha, blah, blah, blah. Major is dying inside and not just because of that wound. I mean, I just want to go, it's okay, but she was just protecting you. I'm trying to explain to him through the TV why she did what she did.
Yeah, I was just, oh my God, kill me now. It was so painful. Like, enough. I don't want them to be at odds. I want them to be happy. I rarely ship the main couple on the show. It
Right.
almost never
It's a
happens.
death. Well, and it's a death wish. Usually when they do come
Exactly.
together,
But
it's a death
here,
knell for the
I
series.
knew from the very beginning that Liv and Major are the end game. I just didn't know what obstacles the writers would throw at them. And this isn't an obstacle. It's an avalanche that's going to separate them for, I can't even imagine how long.
Well, and I know this is a trope of how you find out. Your loved one doesn't tell you. It's somebody else. And usually the somebody else who is the bane of your existence. I hate this person. You are evil, but you just told me the truth that my loved one couldn't tell. So, I mean, it's a tired trope. I think they did a really good job though of communicating it and making it fresh. And I'm actually going to give it more to the guys in this one than to Rose. And not saying Rose did a bad job, but she had the more bystander job in this. Not the action. I really love how David and Robert
Played.
played this, both with each other and with her, and that the looks were just really great, which made it even more satisfying. When Blaine just is thinking he's totally, so I've got shot. Big deal. I'm a zombie. I mean, if
I'll walk it
Sebastian,
off.
exactly, just walk it off. If Sebastian can walk it off with the blade marks across his face, what's a shot to the gut? No big deal.
It's nothing.
And I've got friends in high places. No big deal. And then she takes that syringe and cures Blaine. You're the guinea pig now. Well, so let's see. Are you gonna last? Are you gonna die like Hope One did?
Or are you going to survive?
Are you gonna survive and be a human again?
Or are you going to bleed to death?
It's interesting that, well, first off, she was walking around with this, but that's the guttural reaction to everything she just did. And it kind of reminds me of the movie The Mummy with Brendan
Oh, I loved
Fraser.
it.
At the end, that's like one of those total cheesy popcorn movies that I love, and every time it comes on TV, I watch it because it's perfectly satisfying as a popcorn movie. And Brendan Fraser back then, and Odette Fair, not bad to look at. But when they say the incantation, and Imhotep is still coming at them, and she's like, "I thought it was going to kill him," and he stabs him through the gut. She goes, "He's mortal now," and that's what does it. It's like, Blaine, you are mortal now. You are no longer this demi underworld god. You're no better than everybody else you've been killing. And that moment was awesome.
The only flaw
Awesome.
in this scene was the fact that Liv was walking around with the syringe and the cure in it. It was a little bit of a stretch, and it wasn't jarring in the episode while I was watching it, but It's something that I came up with later on as I was thinking how what we're going to talk about. This was something that jumped out at me as one of their biggest mistakes. Because I'm willing to suspend my disbelief and all that, but it was like it was this stutter for a second, you know. Really? She would be walking around with it?
This is one of those things that I'm going to attribute to the cutting room floor. Sometimes because of time constraints, because this is network TV. So they do have time constraints because they do have to have commercials. This isn't like some shows that if like an HBO show that can run a little bit longer or a little bit shorter, as long as it's in the general wheelhouse of the time that they're allotted. I'm going to say maybe this shot of her putting it in her purse or whatever, or looking at it, not wanting to part from her, just ended up on the cutting room floor. We're just gonna
Hey,
pass
did
right by
it
that.
throw me out of the episode? It's just something that, you know, to think about. It's still almost non-existent as a flaw when the episode is so awesome. So.
What I did think was an awesome way to kind of finish a bunch of the stuff that we have in the show that is more the procedural, more the, I'd say every day, but you know, the more physical side of the world was after we have all this, Suzuki, who's eating his little sandwich, our lieutenant here, hears this police report of these gunshots fired and he hears where it is and he goes to see it and sees the bloodbath after everything's gone. Blaine is gone, Liv and Major are gone. And he does his cover up again. Oh, it's all clear. It's just kids with firecrackers. No big deal. And I really thought that was going to be the end of it, that he was just going to find a way to kind of cover up some things, you know, and what it was. But he ends up staging meet cute as like a massacre and shoots himself so that he's kind of comes out a hero. Esque kind of thing in this. So we see that he gets a leg shot and uses that blood to write Blaine. Notice he wrote Blaine D and then part of the wall had torn down so you didn't see Blaine's last name. It's just Blaine D. He's staging this whole massacre that Clive ends up coming to, you know, finding and being a part of. And Clive sees Blaine written in blood. He sees that Suzuki is now dead because he's killed himself. I like that Suzuki was kind of tormented about that too. About like he's still kind of, it's like he'd reached that point where he couldn't continue on. And maybe because Meet Cute was taken down, he knew he would become a monster if he didn't have this continuous supply and just couldn't do it. And like his actual act of heroism, selflessness, finally. Everything else, I think, up till now had been very selfish. So Suzuki gets to be kind of selfless. What did you think about Suzuki in this episode and his end?
I was actually really, really impressed. Because Suzuki is the kind of, he's not even a secondary character. He was, you know, third, row.
Incidental,
Yeah,
yeah.
incidental. But in this episode, he, forgive the pun, went out with a bang. Like, literally, that's one thing. But I liked that, through the entire season, he was morally ambiguous, right? We didn't really know where he stood and whether or not he just accepted the fact that he's under Blaine's thumb because he needs a brain. This episode showed us how conflicted he was. And in the end, I think he was the epitome of a good cop. Because he sacrificed himself for the greater good. Because he knows what kind of a danger zombie can be. And instead of allowing himself or risking himself becoming this dangerous creature, monster, he decided to take everyone out and take himself out as well. Though I have to say that I didn't look closely enough to see if he had injuries that would had injuries deep enough to get to the brain. And part of me really wants him to wake up in the morgue so that people know he's a zombie, and so that he can gain additional, source of brains. Because he's too awesome of a character for me to give him up just like that. So I will, until fall, I will live in the land of denial and think that he's going to wake up and he's going to survive. And you are not allowed to destroy my land of denial.
Either way that it does happen, whether he does come back or he just goes out in this blaze
Glory.
of glory
Yeah.
and more selflessness, but also he's just, I think, just like how Major is so disgusted by the idea, even though Major was human, I think Suzuki has been having that same kind of, this is gross, I'm a monster, I can't, how am I still, and like, putting out of his mind enough to continue in life. But he's realizing what a monster he is and what a monster he could become, and just decides it's time, the best thing. But doesn't just go out where he's a victim of this. He's actually pointing towards Blaine, which now puts Blaine in a hot seat. That could be very interesting because we see Blaine being stitched up at the end by a vet, and it hurts him. And the vet looks a little confused as to why. So I don't know if this vet knew that Blaine was a zombie, and why do you need me to stitch you up? Aren't you just going to heal? Or if it's some other thing. But Suzuki has now put a spotlight on Blaine for the cops. And Blaine is now a human again. Or he's cured. He's unzombied. He's un-undead. Something like that.
He's almost
And I,
alive.
exactly. Which I think is interesting. At the same time, again, with those strings that go through, we see that Clive sees on Julian Jerome's shoes. Wait, wait, wait a second. Let me see this again. Let me see this again. And Clive now says, bring in Major and run a gun residue test on him. Because Clive is putting together these things. This is how upset Major was. Major was not only upset about the disappearance of the kids, but about our inactivity and how we were treating things.
And he already accused this guy of stuff.
Right.
And now the
And
tree.
he went into a mental institution, but doesn't necessarily know the full scope of it because Clive isn't best buds with Major, but he knows this. So did Major do this? Well, he's 100% right. I mean, here's one of those. Clive, awesome cop. You're 100% right
Your
about who
gut
did this.
is telling you the right thing.
Exactly. You just don't know the full story yet. But it puts this one scene has put two of our male characters in jeopardy for season two. Because Major's now in jeopardy with the police. Blaine is now in jeopardy with the police. And it keeps them tied to reality. Because that's what Clive is. He's still the real world. And I think that was a really interesting twist, even though I don't like it, because it means Major is in major trouble.
But hey, we are looking forward to that major trouble.
We are speaking of the major trouble at the end of that sequence. Okay, now we're going to get into a little bit more of our philosophical side here. After she cures Blaine, she has this moment. Major's dying. So what do you do? Scratch to scratch or not to scratch? What would you do in this situation?
See, this is the problem where you shouldn't ask me questions like that, because I'm of a firm belief that it's better to ask forgiveness than permission. But at the same time, I'm really big on consent being given to any body altering things. So I am hesitant because this is, you should not turn people against their will. I do not want to say the R word, basically, but yeah, it goes against everything that I believe in to just ignore somebody's consent. And sure, he was unconscious at the time, but at no point in time did I believe that Liv was doing it for Major. She was turning Major for herself. because she did not want to lose him. And it's okay for her to break up with him for his own good, but it's not okay for him to leave her, not on her terms. That's almost the way I saw that scene. I knew that it was coming because we saw it coming from 3 episodes ago, like we already discussed, but I knew it was coming and I knew why it was coming because I see the value in the conflict of where they will go with it in season two. But ethically speaking, I did not agree with Liv's decision. I'm in major camp on this one.
I think this was a great counterpoint to how she felt about when Lowell died, how close she got to Lowell, how he died, and he died in a way that he was dead. I mean, his second death, not the first death, but the second one. That was her fault. Lowell died because of her plan, and then because how she couldn't follow through. And he was left in this situation with Blaine. Here's Blaine, here's Lowell, and Blaine is responsible for killing Lowell. And he killed Lowell because Liv was unable to act. And she still has this. We know she's been tormented on this. And this is something that we haven't liked because we liked Bradley James so much as Lowell, and we liked their interaction. And I would be hesitant in bringing this whole thing up, knowing that my only protection is 7 hours
And
of
an ocean.
flying time, and an ocean. But I think it's a great counterpoint because what she is she's brought right back to that moment. Major has been shot because of her and by Blaine. Major is going to die because Blaine, because of what Blaine has done to him and because of where, what position she's put him in. And this is her in that moment only way out is to say, how do I save him? What do I do? And he has just learned this horrid truth about me. How do I make this up to it? So I see her doing this very selfishly. Yes, I totally 100% agree. This was a very selfish moment for her. But I don't think, I mean, there's do not resuscitate orders out there. Are there, DNZs, do not zombie orders? It's not something I think he was thinking of. She was reacting out of all the pain that she'd been through and the moment that she had. And I think it made that whole Lowell scene, what ended up happening with Lowell, have more value. Because it wasn't just, we need to get rid of this new boyfriend because he doesn't actually play in the end game. It actually played into the finale. It actually played into this moment that is going to be this great philosophical moment between the two of them. Those scenes when he wakes up and she's bringing him the soup, hey, this will just help out. It's not going to totally do this. And she's thinking, okay, now you and I can be together. And, she's seeing this happily ever after now. She's still remembering that whole thing when she was on, the psycho drugs brain. She's still remembering that major. That was an illusion. And she's still hoping and dreaming and thinking for that. The look on Major's face. The doesn't lying come naturally to you now? It's better to lie than to tell the truth. And when he's, at first you're like, okay, they're just bantering back and forth. He's just adjusting to this. But when he says, what's the greater good for me? Did you decide based on what you wanted or what I wanted? And if you, whatever, that decision, you don't know me at all then. And him turning away from her in the bed. That was such a powerful moment of alienation from the one person that she's thought this entire season. They were so in sync. She even told Lowell stuff like that, like how in sync they were and how perfect they were. Everybody thinks they were perfect. Guess what? You didn't know each other as well as you thought on both ends. And I love that gut punch that she got, that gut check, that he would actually rather have died than to be what she is.
And I feel like that moment led her to another and last in this episode selfish act, because while I might understand that Liv once again thought she was curing Major for Major, I think that she was curing him to get rid of the guilt. So in a way, it was yet another selfish act towards Major, where she did it to make herself feel better. And within that, she basically threw out any chance that Ravi has for reverse engineering it and making it wider, bigger batch of the cure. And she threw away chances of curing other zombies out there because she didn't want to feel guilty. And when I was watching her, pushing the cure into Major, I just had this, moment of, oh my God, can you imagine how Major is going to feel now? When, because now he knows that, zombies are actually, a thing, and he knows, Liv knows, and probably Ravi at some point he will learn that Ravi knows. Can you imagine how it's going to make him feel to know that the last possible sample of a possible cure that Ravi could take and use and save zombies instead of killing them got quote unquote wasted on him?
Well, I the last easy example, because
Yeah.
we do have all this, we've got all this set up here with Vaughn and
Yes, but
how he's.
they don't know that there is possible sources of
Well,
force.
no, actually, I think they do, because remember, we saw when Clive was doing detective work and he sees all that stuff on the cloud, they have that video, so they already have the seeds there for Supermax.
Yeah,
This
but I
isn't
don't
something
want
that's
them
just.
to realize that Supermax is yet another source of tainted utopia.
Well, no, but what I'm saying though is the seeds are planted there, and you do need a seed to be planted somewhere to grow, because Ravi can't just lose his science. I need to find a cure. It needs to be harder now for him to get it, and they need to figure out. And for Vaughn to be a baddie, you need to have that. There's a reason, not just because of what he's doing, but because of what he's keeping from the Scooby Gang and the good guys and how they could do it. So you need that planted. And I mean, I'm not saying they realize that the seeds have been planted. This is just like we're talking about the seeds being planted way, way back, the foreshadowing.
Yeah,
This hopefully will
but
take
I
more
want
than a
them
season.
to take a while because I want Ravi to be
Well,
conflicted and angry at
no, they
Liv
will.
and
They will. But
possibly,
well, okay.
conflicted about being angry.
Well, yeah, okay. That's future stuff. But I'm still talking about now stuff, because you were saying that they've taken away all hope. I think that the fact that they've taken away any easy way for him to do this, to have this and replicate this is like having a small amount of the vaccine that I can replicate. Puts a hurdle between her and Ravi now, because she did react that way. It does put that hurdle between her and Major, because he was, however briefly, I don't know if he felt a craving, if she was able to
I
satiate
saw
it enough.
the hair. Did you see the hair? The white lock.
Yeah. But yeah, so I don't know if he's had
Yeah.
any of that yet, if he experienced any of that, but he knows that he came back that way and now he's back to being human, so you know he's gonna feel different from everybody. This is setting up. He is going to find out that his bromance with Ravi also has an undercurrent of lies
Yeah.
in it. And so you can see that all these seeds of Major being ostracized is there. And the pain that it's going to cause, it is causing Liv already and is going to cause Ravi. And the fact that he's put in peril because Clive is now seeking him out. And guess what? If they do a ballistics test, Major wasn't wearing gloves.
Yeah, he's going to
Major,
fail.
there's going to be some way that smart Clive cop is going to hook all these together. While we have Vaughn out there upset about all the news, meditating, but he's got a plan again. Because to the press, he's saying, we're just getting started.
Yeah.
So you can see Major is being driven even further away. I mean, that moment when he's like, you let me commit myself, think I was crazy, and all the time you knew. I mean, just the hurt that he feels is so incredible and so palpable that it's going to be nice to see next season how far apart they are, because they have been still so buddy-buddy close, you know, watching movies, hanging out, doing, you know, trying to get back to each other. This divide is good because, yeah, the end game is Liv and Major. Bradley James even said it. That's the end game, is Liv and Major. And we have to get back to that. I just see the divide between them getting bigger and bigger. And her, again, like you said, reacting, this is what I want.
Yeah.
I need to get this guilt off of me, of what I did in my emotions, because I felt guilty about Lowell and I love Major and blah, 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 blah. So let me give it to him and use it all. I can see Ravi like on the syringe going, is there anything left in here? You know, that's left. Her feeling like she's done this. She's okay. At least things are better now. Major is back to being human. Blaine is now human. He can't turn anybody else. I'll figure everything else out later. But there's a wrinkle that she did not anticipate. This teeny tiny wrinkle that we'd been kind of questioning. Well, okay, you set this up and then you do nothing. And then last week we have the whole Evan turning in the application. He's going to go to Meet Cute. He's going to start working there. He goes and goes to work, looks in the window, sees all the dead bodies. This is where Suzuki did mess up, because he had the gas that he's trying to light to blow everything up to kill him and everybody else, and ends up injuring poor Evan. Evan got it full on in the face. He was right in the window.
When I saw it, I was like, is he dead? Oh my God, did you just kill a teenager, Liv's brother? Did you?
I know.
And that was my reaction, while I do not care about Liv's brother, and I've said so numerous times.
Yes.
But it was so shocking because I did not see coming.
They set it up really, because at first, I thought, did they kill him? He got blasted so much. There's a new commercial out there for some sort of pizza roll that has like a fiery powder coating on it. And as soon as a guy bites into it, that like the cheesy hot powder coating just spews over everybody. It's like blowing out the house. And that's what I'm thinking. I think it was even in this episode that they saw that. And that's what I'm thinking. And then when Liv gets called there and runs to the hospital, and Mom is there, who we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah.
And Liv sees what's happened to him, but oh my gosh, it's touch and go. We don't know if he's going to make it. He has O negative blood, which is really rare, which we did, Alex and I, before this, we went online and looked at it, because Alex is actually O negative. She's a universal donor, but that means she can only accept O negative blood. And I'm looking up like US population, what it says, and she was looking at Polish population. Worldwide, the estimate is only 5% of people worldwide have O negative blood. Because I'm like, really? You're in I'll just agree with that. I'm gonna nod my head. Like, you're in Seattle and there's no O negative blood. This isn't like boondocks. You know, it's like, come on, there's gotta be some O negative. So that's why I'm looking it up. It is actually a very rare blood type. So if you have O negative, it's very good to go donate blood, because you can give it to anybody. But guess who also happens to be O negative besides Alex? I mean, Alex, if you weren't in Poland, if you want to jump on a plane and fly to Seattle, you could save Evan. No problem.
Yeah, nope.
She didn't want to come visit me. So the only other source of O negative blood in the world besides Alex is Liv.
Liv.
Mom is like, yay, you're O negative. You can go give blood. Go, come on, Liv, go with the doctor. And this was, you have endings of seasons that are big explosions or great romantic moments or something. This was one word, very softly, fade to black.
No.
No.
So powerful.
I loved it. Oh, it was such a power. What a great ending, because this is her brother who she adores. But if she gives the blood, he's going to become a zombie. And she just gave the last bit of the antidote to Major, and the other one to Blaine. It's like she wasted it on Blaine. And if she hadn't done it to Blaine, She could have saved Major and still saved Evan, no problem. What a conundrum for the summer.
But after watching her make selfish decision after selfish decision, it was so much more powerful to hear her say no. Because in a way, saving her brother is as easy as giving him her blood. And yet she doesn't. And whatever happens, happens. But after that emotional and terrible in a way that it was very bad for her emotional state, scene with Major, putting Evan's humanity as her priority. I think if we didn't have this whole philosophical debate moments before, it would not hit me as strongly. It would still,
No.
be a powerful moment, but the build-up leading up to that no was what made it even more amazing and delicious.
It was even more than like on the TV show Being Human. Aiden was very upset when I think it was Rebecca was the character turned the child into a vampire. Hey, we can be a family now. So you don't turn a child. You don't turn someone like that. They are, stuck forever, basically, as this child, and they don't have the wherewithal to make this consented decision about the rest of their life when they're still young. He's still this young kid, too. And so it's one of those you don't, not only do you not turn him because of that, you're still a child. It's not right. But she's still on this emotional roller coaster. Which I think is interesting because now she's going the exact opposite. Before, it's like, I'm going to save you by turning into a zombie. Here, I'm going to save your humanity, but I'm not going to save your body by not turning you into a zombie. It's still this very emotional thing. And she's still being really affected. Like the Major decision was affected by Lowell. This Evan decision is affected by Major. And she can't get out of this emotional reactionary spiral of what it is, whether whichever way is right. I mean, do you turn somebody who is a child basically into this monster who's not going to understand? Is he gonna, would he think it's cool? Would it be okay if you asked him, hey, get him conscious and let me tell him, hey, by the way, your sister's a zombie. I can save you by giving you some of my blood, but that'll make you a zombie, and that means you're gonna have to eat human brains. Do you let him die as a human?
The
And
best thing.
turn your mom totally against you because you're refusing to give blood and mom doesn't know why you're
And
refusing to give blood.
that's the best part about it, because her mother and later on her brother will not know why she made that decision, why she said no. So she's not only at odds with Major, she will be now at odds again with her family. So basically everybody turns away from her. Peyton, Major, her family, probably at the very beginning of the season two, of season two, Ravi, as a way of, we had cured, now we don't have it.
I think Ravi's going to be upset with her, but I don't think he's going to turn away. But we have Clive too. That could also
Mess things up.
be alienated. Yeah, he could be alienated from all this. I think she's actually, in a way, almost left more alone than she was
At the beginning, yeah.
at the beginning. And I honestly don't know what I would do. What I probably, in the Major Liv situation, I probably would have done exactly what she did, to be quite honest. Not right, not wrong, emotional situation. He's dying in front of me. He's dying because of me. I have a way to save him. I probably would. But after all that's happened, to be confronted with Evan and that possibility, I don't know that I could do that. I think I'd be with her on the no on that one. No. There's got to be another way. APB, Twitter. Who's O negative in the Seattle area? Please, please, please. Yeah, it was a really powerful season finale.
Yeah, it was marvelous.
We do have season two coming back. It's going to be in October is when it's starting. We don't have an exact date yet. We do have some things from Rob Thomas that are kind of hinting that Blaine will be back, that he won't meet an untimely end. I would hope so, because I think he's going to be interesting now that all the zombies out in the zombie land that he created in Blaine's zombie world still know him as their brain
But there
source.
are no brains.
Well, yeah, and the big guy that wanted the astronaut brains, I mean, the astronaut brain thing really could have been a one-off, one episode, maybe carry into the second.
Yeah.
It's been multiple episodes. And this is a powerful guy that wants these
Yeah,
brains.
he's not going away.
He's not going away. And what is he gonna do? And now Blaine doesn't have his muscle anymore. All of his henchmen
Dead. And
are
he had,
gone, dead and gone. He doesn't have a chef anymore to prepare them. I don't think Blaine has the skills. He probably doesn't have the astronaut brains anymore. I'm sure they got blown up quite nicely, unless he kept them in a car, but he could still have them. But so he's gonna have zombies from everywhere, from street zombies to this, shark zombie after him, and he's human now. So I'm thinking he's gonna come back, and I do think that he would be great to see with Steven Weber.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, this is
Those,
something we can look forward to. Hopefully
yeah,
they're going to
because
bring him back.
oh, I think they've set it up too perfectly where they do. I don't think he would, I think he would be a reoccurring. I don't think he's going to be a series regular, but I think he'll recur frequently enough. I mean, I like how he's been kind of this season, a little bit more, but how he popped up in this episode and then pops up in this episode. I think we'll have him popping up more, but
Yeah.
not every episode. We do have Thomas confirming that actress Ally Mikkola, sorry if I totally mispronounced her name, could be coming back for season two. Okay.
Yes.
Yes, she could be, because they did say there's a chance. One of the reasons he did, which I like this, he goes, there is a danger that when you have someone as a guest star, that you can lose them at any time, which we've talked about. She's a guest star, not a series regular.
Yeah.
It's not like a Walking Dead where you have 15 people that are always there, so anybody's at risk. We had, what was that, like five main cast, and she's a guest star. So yeah, we could lose her at any time. And at the time we were doing this, she was shooting a pilot, and we thought there's a chance we'll never get to see her again if her pilot goes and she's on a show for the next few years. Well, the pilot that she shot did not go. So what we did with her gives us the opportunity to bring her back. So hopefully, even though Peyton is gone on the lam, we're going to see her back. And I'd love to see her back as a series regular. If her other show didn't get picked up, I think she needs to be series regular. Yes, no?
Definitely, definitely. Sign her up. Convince her, because Peyton, on top of all the conflict that we got coming out of the season finale, would be amazing. Because this is something we talked about at the very beginning of the show. There's Rose. And nobody else. She's the sole female character of note if Peyton doesn't come back. Either we would have to get her mother to get a bigger role, because we need more female characters. This is something that iZombie should think about going into season two. More female characters with staying power.
I think we are going to see Mom more because of how we've left this season with Evan. So
Yeah.
I think we will have the opportunity for Mom to come more, but Mom would still be a guest star. I think Peyton needs to be a series regular. And it would be interesting because I have this question of WWMDN. What will Major do now? Because he's back to being human,
Yeah.
but he knows the truth. And he's going to be alienated from this. So we have him potentially with Ravi and all this. So where does Major go after this? And would Peyton, when she comes back, I'm going to be positive that Peyton's coming back for season two.
Yeah.
When she comes back, where is she going to go? Is she going to go more on Major's side? Is she going to go more on Liv's side? Or is she going to be kind of in the middle with Ravi? Are like Peyton and Ravi going to be that where they understand both sides. And maybe Ravi helps make her okay with what Liv is. You know, I've known all this time and she, you know, she's struggling on this and blah, blah, blah. And this is why we're doing this. I'm hoping that she comes back and it's a Ravi Peyton kind of alliance to bridge this gap, because I don't see Major and Liv being on the same book, much less the same page.
Yeah.
For quite a while.
Yeah, that's for sure. And Peyton would be a nice addition to Major's story arc.
So something I think we need to do is similar to what Rob Thomas wants us to do, is they have been renewed, but they've only been picked up for 13 episodes at this point. And Thomas says that the show is hoping to get to 22. Now, here's where we're like, I would be excited for that, but I'd also be scared because we saw what happened to Gotham when they got bumped up to 22 episodes. But he was talking about the fact that with a niche series like this one, what do you need to do to ensure that? And I think it's kind of like Sleepy Hollow. I'm bringing up all of our other podcasts that we've done.
Well done.
Except for Orphan Black. Oh, wait, there, I just brought that one up too. Sleepy Hollow also was originally less episodes, and it got a few more. And it got renewed because of fan reaction. Hashtag renew Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah.
So I think if we need to see, if we want Peyton to come back as a regular, I think it's up to the fans. Because like they say, this is not an art house fair, but it's a fun show. It's this great niche thing out there. So that there's opportunities to check it out. They're thinking that CW will re-air maybe most of it during the summer. So I think to get Peyton back, and maybe, I don't know how I feel about the episodes. I kind of almost like the 13 episode, but we'll see. But definitely for Peyton, I think we need to start a little hashtag campaign to get Peyton as a series regular.
Yeah, that's something I would get behind. Definitely.
Another kind of philosophical thing here. Does Vaughn, what does he know? Is he a zombie? Vaughn seems very...
See, there was this little quizzical facial tick, almost, when the secretary brought him the newspaper, where I went, huh. Because even if he isn't a zombie, I'm pretty sure he has some anger management issues anyway. Because you could see this rage bubbling under the surface. But he, you know, put it in check and got himself under control. And all we got was this little raised corner of the mouth, you know, this little sneer that was almost there because things did not go as planned. But then he got himself back into the Zen mind and just, you know, went with it. So I think it would be interesting if he was a zombie, but at the same time, I almost don't want him to be a zombie. Because, like Blaine said, being a zombie doesn't make you a monster. And we already see, we already saw zombies as monsters. I want to see the monster be human in season two. Because it would
be, I think it would be
nice and poetic, almost.
I think it would be better if he wasn't.
Yeah.
I really do. And if Blaine and him are either on the same side or opposing sides, kind of opposing sides of the same thing. Like they both want the same, they're both megalomaniacs and have different things. But to have two humans be the monsters while Liv is trying to be more human. It's that kind of dichotomy that I think is really interesting. And puts that mirror on us. So I hope he's not a zombie. But I hope he still stays deliciously evil and doesn't care if more people turn into zombies.
Yeah, that would be that would be perfect.
Speaking of who knows, Clive, is he suspecting things? And what's going to happen now that Clive is bringing Major in for questioning in this mass thing? Is Clive going to find out from Major?
Huh. That's an interesting idea, because I've said that at the very beginning when we started podcasting this show, that I don't want Clive's situation to turn into Merlin. Which, by the way, I used that example way before Lowell showed up. So, you know, just FYI. But I don't want Clive to not know for the entire series because it's ridiculous and Clive is too smart to not know.
So how does he find out then?
But I stand by what I said in the past podcast. I want him to find out on his own because he showed us he's smart at connecting dots. His major obstacle right now is the same thing that was an obstacle for Major. He does not know that zombies are an option that he can pick on the solution sheet. But here's the thing, he makes all those little comments, like this episode when Liv was acting on the brain, so to speak. And Clive's reaction was, yeah, she does that. And I know that he thinks she's a psychic. And a lot of her behavior might, in his mind, be attributed to her being a psychic. But there are moments where she's a little more obvious than in other moments. And I really, really need him to find out. He might even, I wouldn't want that, but he might find out by accident, you know, walking in on something he wasn't supposed to see and stuff like that. I want him to find out and I want him to react better than people have reacted so far. 'Cause Liv needs some positive reinforcement.
I don't know. I think Ravi a reacted very good, better
But
than
Ravi
ever
balks.
expected.
There's
Well,
Ravi
but
and there's everybody
you're
else.
just saying when other people find out, I think Ravi is a stellar example of how perfectly somebody can
Yes,
find out.
so we need a second Ravi, basically.
I think it would be interesting if he finds out because of Major. I don't think Major would believe that anybody would believe him if he just came out and said it. But I think Major would be the one that's going to point him on the right direction. And
Possibly.
if they don't have some kind of alliance, number one, that would kind of put Clive and Major a little bit more on the same side, with Clive torn again between reality, which is Major, and this almost unbelievableness of that represents Liv's side. So I think Major can only plant seeds that Clive then has to find out. But if Major and Clive are kind of on the same side, that kind of also we I mean we have to somehow get past this massacre at Meet Cute. I mean, this is a massacre and an explosion, and it's not something that's going to slip under the radar. Newspapers are going to pick up on this, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
They're so going to pick up on this. And like we said, Major, his fingerprints literally are all over this. So there has to be a way that Major is not sent to prison. Because this would be prison. Death
Oh yeah.
sentence type prison
Oh yeah.
for these, actually six, because if we include Suzuki in it. And seven. No, actually, because we have Tommy's body too. So there's seven bodies in this. Yeah,
Yeah.
Major would be in major extreme trouble. So he needs Clive official help on that. I would also like to see Clive not turn on, but be questioning and put off not only by Liv, but also by Ravi, because people are going to realize that Ravi knew too. Ravi's going to be on the outs. So I think however upset Ravi is going to be, I think it's going to bring Ravi and Liv closer, because Peyton's going to figure out that Ravi had something to do with it. Major's going to figure out that Ravi had something to do with it. Clive's going to
Right.
figure out that Ravi had something to do with it. Ravi's not going to have a friend either, except for Clip, except for Liv. So I think they're going to have to come together.
I cannot wait for season two. Honestly, it's just all those questions are just hyping me up. I want it now. I want it
I have one more question for you.
Hit me.
On the sci-fi for chicks, iZombie hotness scale, where would you rate? Let's do two. Where would you rate the season finale? And then I want to know where you would rate
The entire
the
season.
first season as a whole.
Okay.
So let's start with the finale.
Well, the finale is an easy answer for me. Weary, weary. 10. I loved it. And I didn't even see the flaws in the episode until the episode was over. And I had time to actually wrap my brain around it. I was into it. Nothing threw me as I was watching it. This was a perfectly executed season finale. So 10 all the way. Loved it. Loved it.
This is kind of like our Orphan Black podcast when we pick our clone queen and our best backup, which I wish I could pick for this one too. Not the clone queen, but best backup. I have so many nominees for best backup in this, but that's not this episode, this series. Sometimes we are in 100% agreement on picking our clone queen and backup. I totally agree with you. This is totally weary, weary. It's a 10. It actually even had a little dash of ghost pepper. It was,
Nice.
it's on the high side of 10. Like if you know music, you can be right on the note or you can be a little
Little,
bit like on top of the
yeah.
note. Not necessarily sharp yet, but a little on top of the note or you can be a little underneath the note. This is on top of that note. This
Yeah.
is reaching for ghost pepper on this. It was just awesome. So I
Okay.
totally agree with you. Weary, weary all the way.
Exactly. As
Now,
far
but
as
that leaves us with the season one. Where do you rate it?
See, that's actually in comparison to season finale, you might think it's low, but it's actually in comparison to other shows that I've watched this season, it's actually on the high end of my entire TV experience this season because I'm rating it 8+. I'm rating it high with just, not even a little, with a healthy dose of Scotch bonnet because it's like, you said a little above the note. It's like strong 8 with additional spice to it because it was an incredibly strong first season. And in fact, you might revoke my Sci-Fi for Chicks cred for it, but I really do feel like first season of iZombie was even stronger than the first season of Sleepy Hollow, show that people who listen to our podcast know we absolutely love. I had so much fun this season. We started watching it, and I know I started watching it as a kind of way to pass the time, to be entertained. But I got so into it. And me getting so into it is that extra spice of a 9 that I throw in there. So it's 8+, basically.
I'm similar. I'm going from a weary, weary for the episode to a peery, peery for the season. So I'm an 8. Solid 8. I'm not reaching for a 9. It's just solid 8 for me. Which, when I consider that the first episode I rated a 4, a jalapeno, and I've had my ups and downs, I think a solid 8 for your first season is damn good. This season has impressed me. It's been fun and funny. It's been smart. It's had some foibles, but not major ones. The only
Major.
major foible is that there was no shirtless men in this final episode,
Hey,
which I should have
Major
knocked it
was
down.
shirtless, but it's something we expect
That's true.
now.
That's true. He was. I was. I guess I was too busy looking at the emotion. You're right. I'm sorry. How did I miss that? I've got to go back and watch the ending again. I was too
For,
busy on the emotional side.
plot. Watch it for the
Yeah.
plot.
I was too busy watching it for the plot, and not for the cheesecake.
Mm-hmm.
Oh wait, that sounds good. I'm hungry. I will say, if we do podcast on iZombie again, which if we need to hear, should we be continuing that next season? So you can let us know. Email scififorchicks at scififorme.com or the hotline 573-427-2434. That's 573-42 sci-fi, or of course over on Twitter at scififorme. for at Sci-Fi for Chicks. Let us know if you think we should continue. If we do, I'm already putting it out there that because these last, I'm going to say really like six episodes have been basically somewhere in that 8, 9, 10 range constantly, that next season, even if it's an awesome episode, the scale's going to move down.
Oh,
so
yeah.
0 and 1 aren't going to be crap. Well, 0 might be crap. We'll leave Sweet Bell and Banana Pepper as, okay, this was an awful episode. But a really hot episode is going to be a 5. So we're going to have to move down because we can't stay up there in that 8, 9, 10 range for every episode.
It
We got to
says
have a little
you.
range. No, we're going to move it down. We're going to move
Fine.
It down. So we got to get some of these other peppers a little bit there. Well, you know, I want to make it really difficult to reach for that ghost pepper, that Carolina Reaper, that uber hot.
Fine, fine. Let's do it your way.
We want to know what you would rate this, what pepper you would rate this, not on the revised scale. You know, just like tornadoes. There's the EF scale. It just used to be like an F5 tornado for the Fujita scale. Now it's the enhanced Fujita scale, so that actually what used to be a 5 is now a 4. So, I mean, they do it in science. They move the scales down.
But
this is not
they demoted a tornado. Imagine how that makes it feel.
Well, that means because they didn't want to keep adding numbers to it. So when the storms were getting more powerful, they didn't want to add numbers to it. So this is not the enhanced hotness scale. This is just the hotness scale as it is. We want to know where you would rate this on the Sci-Fi for Chicks Eye Zombie hotness scale. Do you agree with us that this episode was a weary-weary? Do you agree about the season as a whole that we're a peri-peri tie, which is the exact same one, by the way, which is a little... I like peri-peri. It's kind of Portuguese, and I'm not as big on the tie. Let us know, because we really want to know. And we want to know if you want to hear more podcasting on iZombie come October, when we might get really busy or not busy at all. We want to thank you for joining us for this first season, 13 episodes of iZombie. Thank you for sticking with us on this super-sized episode. It's super hot.
Oh, yeah.
Quite hot and rare episode, the O negative episode here. We will hope you listen to us as we finish up Orphan Black. We have 2 more episodes in that, and you don't want to miss those, so make sure and subscribe to us on iTunes or the podcast platform of your choice, and go over to scififorme.com for all the fun and podcasts and TV shows and fun stuff going on over there. Alex, thank you so much for an awesome hot season
of
iZombie. We will see you on Orphan Black and hopefully next season. Have a great summer, everyone. Bye-bye.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.